Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. My name is Alyssa Mitchell, a.k.a. Kendall Hart Slater. And make sure you get the buzz on Buzzworthy Radio. Yeah.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I guess that's another intro we're doing. It is Buzzworthy Radio, and thank you for laughing because I didn't know we were on. But it's Matt P. and Lee. We are here. I was actually given the honors to do the introduction, and I guess I messed it up, but oh well.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, man.
Good. We have a really great show planned for tonight.
We do
have
a great show planned.
We have a special guest, Suzanne Wong. She's on, you know, she's on a bunch of stuff. You guys will know her from Las Vegas, and she hosts a reality show, and she's been in a lot of things, actually.
What hasn't she done is basically my question. As a matter of fact...
soap operas.
Yeah, exactly. As a matter of fact, I think we actually have her with us right now, right here from the beginning.
Oh,
how
wow.
How do you like that? How do you like that?
Wow, we just, like, bring people on.
Bring people on right here at the beginning of the program.
He's like, hey, I thought we were going to bring them on at like 10, 15, or quarter after, or quarter till, but oh, well, you said it, seriously, just bring them on.
We got all the time in the world for everybody, you know what I mean?
Of course.
Yeah, we got plenty of time. We got plenty of time. So let's bring her on here right now. Our next guest that we're having on this show tonight went from hosting local news to hosting House Hunters on HGTV. From stand-up to author, there's nothing she hasn't done. Except for soaps, like we said. You can now see her recur as Polly on NBC's hit show, Las Vegas. Let's take a listen to one of her scenes.
Congratulations, Polly. Manicurist of the year.
Oh, thank you for make framing. Yeah, I finally beat Suji from Benetian, win big award, BFD.
What's wrong?
Award meaningless when rice pointless.
Guy trouble.
Cholho leave me. Take magic finger and walk out the door.
Why?
I say something about marriage. He flip out like a time I put fist in a bad place, get stuck.
Ooh, I'm so sorry. Maybe you should take some time off.
Can I just stop working?
Well, just a few days, you know, pull yourself together.
Suddenly Manny Petty seems so empty.
I like that last part. Please welcome from House Hunters in Las Vegas, Miss Suzanne Wong. How are you doing?
Oh, my God. Hi, Matt P. and Lee. I love that you put on the air my fisting reference from Las Vegas.
I remember that scene, too. I'm a big fan of the show Las Vegas.
Oh.
Whenever I heard that we were going to get the manicures on the
Miss
Suzanne,
especially since my image on House Hunters couldn't be more different.
Of course.
The character of Polly. That just made me laugh so hard. Because just so you guys know, I have the best time working on Las Vegas. It's, I think, my favorite acting job in the 20 years I've been an actress. For a couple of reasons. One, because the cast and crew are amazing, but also because they give me so much room for improvising and ad-libbing, and a lot of writers in Los Angeles are very precious about their words, and they don't want you to change a preposition or a comma. You know, they just think that what they wrote is so brilliant that they don't want you to come up with anything. And these writers and producers let me ad-lib, and that fisting line was an ad-lib that I could not believe when I was sitting home watching the show.
Very
that
nice.
A fisting reference would end up on an NBC primetime show.
You were just sitting there like, I can't believe they just aired that on
I know.
TV.
And all of my friends and family call me up and say, how is that possible? Are the NBC censors not watching the show? And I say, I don't know what's going on, but I don't tell anybody because I just continue to say the most inappropriate things. It's so much fun to play a character that's so the opposite of my House Hunters persona. And basically, my character's job is to clear a room because whatever I say, people go, okay, gotta run.
Because I was actually watching another one of your scenes that you did. You were actually, as a Christmas present, you were giving the boss a massage as his Christmas present. And
he didn't even want it. It was
he didn't even want it.
Yeah, he wanted me. He was so uncomfortable around me, and I offered to give him a happy endings massage. And I think one of my lines is that I would melt his tension away like butter on penis. And he's
yes.
like, what? He looked at me like, he literally turned around and went, what?
They write that for you, or did you ad-lib it?
I think that was actually written for me. And also, what better job do you have than having melt butter on penis? Your
on
mind.
NBC,
on NBC,
and literally at 6:30 in the morning, you know, I'm on set and having conversations like this. What's funny? Or hide the salami, stuff the sausage, or push the pork? When I'm trying to talk about having sex.
That's so funny.
I know. That's 6:30.
I know exactly how you feel. I have to be on set on Saturday at 4:30.
Yeah.
You know how you feel. I was just gonna tell you because. You know, they are, I don't know if they cast it yet, but they are, the movie Homecoming is filming, and the producers definitely said that they needed an Asian waitress. I'm like, you know what, I know, Suzanne, maybe they can be her agent and give her a part.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's with Misha Barton, it's a thriller, and it looks really good.
Why the hell not, you know?
It's on Pittsburgh.
It's so funny because, you know, when I first got the audition, I've been doing a character, a stand-up comedy character named Sung-hee Park for about 5 years now, and I've won awards for doing this completely outrageous, politically incorrect satire on racism in America, where Sung-hee Park is fresh off the boat from Korea, and she comes out and she tells racist jokes, and she's horrible, and she's completely inappropriate, but she doesn't know what she's doing because English isn't her first language, and, you know, it's just sort of like Andy Kaufman meets Archie Bunker going out on stage.
Very nice.
You know,
right.
And when
very
I
nice.
Got the audition, I printed out the sides for this particular role of Polly, and I thought, wait a minute, this is just like Sung-hee Park. It's as if somebody channeled Sung-hee Park and put her on an NBC series. And I realized I felt sorry for all the actresses who were going to show up for that audition because I knew that the role was mine when
very
I read
nice.
It.
I gotta think about it. You know, I hate it. How do you feel about auditions? Do you just like, you know, I can't wait, or is it like very dreadful for you?
I think one of the reasons that I've been paying all of my bills in this, I love auditions and I'm great at auditions, and I think the reason for that is because I'm a Navy brat. You'll find a lot of military brats are in the entertainment industry, and I think it's because
wow.
I'm so used to moving around all my life and always being the new kid in school and always having to make adjustments. I'm sort of addicted to change, whereas most people resist change. They want everything to stay the same. I'm addicted to change, and so an audition is basically like being the new kid in school all over again, and you get really good at it. You get good at walking in and making friends and adapting.
Very nice. And I actually have to ask you, what can you tell us, what has been like the best audition, and what has been the worst audition you've ever had?
Let's see. Best audition was probably for the Las Vegas Comedy Festival, was doing stand-up. Now, this had the recipe for being a disaster because when you do stand-up comedy for two people, that's just really tough because even if they like you, you hear, ha-ha, that's it,
right.
A couple of people. However, for some reason, these two people filled up the room with their laughter, so that was just a wonderful experience to have that happen. I think my worst audition was for a Spike Lee movie called Girl Six, which was about a phone sex operator.
Tyra Banks was in that, right? Or,
who?
No. It wasn't Tyra. I think Tyra Banks was in that. No, it was somebody, Naomi Campbell, maybe?
Maybe, yeah. I don't.
It was one
of them. I actually never saw the movie, but because I didn't get the part, obviously, cause this is a bad story.
Yeah.
So what happened was I was supposed to play a Korean grocery store clerk who some kid comes in and steals something and runs out, and I'm supposed to, like, chase after him and swear at him in Korean.
I know what you're talking about.
You know that scene?
I do know that scene.
Okay, so this is what I'm supposed to do. So I'm not fluent in Korean. I don't know how to swear in Korean. So I call my father, who was an elder in his church,
mm-hmm.
and I say, Dad, hi, how do you say fuck you in Korean?
Oh, my God.
And he is completely cool and funny and awesome. So he says, you know, well, there really is no, you know, exact replica of fuck you in Korean. So I say to him, I'm allowed to swear it, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. Good thing I asked after the fact. That was nice.
Because
I'm like potty mouth in real life, but, you know, I always clean it up for.
And you and I would get along so well. That's the way I am.
So get this. So I ask my father, and he says, well, you know, there really is no exact way to say fuck you in Korean. And I say, well, give me the closest thing. So he says, okay, shipaljashik. So I write down shipaljashik, you know, phonetically, and I write it down, and I say, okay, and shipaljashik. So I have that memorized for this audition. And I say, Dad, what does that, you know, mean? And he goes, well, the literal translation of that is, you are someone who would fuck. And I'm like, that's lame.
That's
I'm thinking,
funny.
That's pathetic. Even our, you know, curse words are polite. That's the Asian for you. You know, yeah, oh, yeah, you are someone who would fuck, so there, you know. So anyway, I write this down. I memorize it. I'm at the audition, and the casting director says, okay, action. So I'm pretending to do things, you know, like I'm around the cash register, because this is literally, there's no lines except for that one thing of swearing. So I'm, like, pretending to do things, and then I pretend to notice, you know, somebody stole something. So I run out the door, and I'm wagging my finger, and I start going, shipaljashik, right? And the casting director goes, good, keep going, improvise. And I'm thinking, improvise?
Improvise.
Oh, my God, what am I going to do?
No.
So all I can remember is how to say the Lord's Prayer from Korean church, like as a little kid. So I go, Hanuregeshin uri aboji, shipaljashik, which translated means, our Father who art in heaven, you are someone who would fuck.
Oh, my God.
And I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, if any Korean ever saw that, they would just be like, this woman needs to go to hell immediately.
Put to shame.
It's like mixing, yeah, she's mixing the Lord's Prayer with, like, fuck you. So that's,
oh, wow.
So I didn't get that part.
Oh, so you have a great story to tell because of it.
I know, and you know, my grandfather, my paternal grandfather was a famous Korean minister, and he was famous for using humor in his sermons, and he traveled all over the world, and he passed away a long time ago, but I know that he was just cracking up so hard.
That's hilarious.
You know, when that happened. So.
Wow.
By the way, you are incorrect. I have done a soap opera.
Really?
I did 2 episodes of Passions, which is the craziest soap opera of all time. It was
goodness.
Like people, you know, smoked crack and then wrote a soap opera,
hilarious.
And then somehow they picked it up and put it on TV. Because there was like an orangutan and witches with magical powers.
Which one did you play on there?
I played a receptionist and some storyline at some doctor's office where this character Beth, I think, was pretending that she was pregnant, but she really had a sack of sugar under there because she was trying to trap her boyfriend into, like, you know, staying with her. And
I thought that Annie getting pregnant with the turkey baster on Sunset Beach was crazy, but Passions, she's taught that.
That's so funny. One of my dear friends is Priscilla Garita, who played Gabby on Sunset Beach.
I love that show.
I
was actually a big fan of the show once it got canceled, you know?
Of course. You know, doesn't matter.
So once it
like
goes
that.
Away, I'm just like, this is a really good show. Plus, I love Aaron Spelling, and
so Priscilla was,
Gabby
was a bad character, so she told me that there were times that, you know, fans would come up and scream at her or want to hit her because she was being a bitch or cheating on somebody. And, you know, that's really frightening to me about soap opera. Like, by the way, first of all, I am a huge All My Children fan. I have no problem confessing this. It's been since high school. And I noticed that you've had Alicia Minshew and Cameron Matheson, and I'm thinking, oh, it's Kendall. You know, it's Brian Lavery. Yeah, there you go, because I've always loved that show. So I just think it's fascinating, though, because I've heard stories of how fans of soap operas will send wedding gifts to the station, or they'll send flowers if a character dies. And I'm like, no. That's not really going on. Those are actors.
Exactly. I had the pleasure to actually meet them on
boat.
Because there was
on the boat? What boat?
There was a boat cruise event that I had attended last month, and Alicia Minshew and Cameron Matheson were a part of this event.
Oh, tell me they were great. They seemed
They were very enjoyable. I loved every minute of it. They were fantastic.
Were you watching Cameron Matheson on Dancing with the Stars? Because I'm friends with Tom Bergeron because he and I worked together on FX and Fox, you know, many years ago. And so I would always watch Dancing with the Stars because I'm friends with Tom. And then I see Cameron on there going, you know what? He improved so much. Good for him.
That's awesome that you know Tom Bergeron. That's so cool.
Oh, yeah, I did Breakfast Time and Fox After Breakfast, both based in New York City. I was a co-host with him on an FX morning show and a Fox morning show.
I love NYC. Good for you.
Yes, I love NYC.
That's exactly where All My Children is filmed, so there you go. You're a New York-bound girl, huh?
I lived in New York for 6 years. I lived in Boston for 6 years. I've been in L.A. for about 10 years. I tell you, I've moved around a lot. Don't you find that a lot when you interview people in this business, that a lot of them moved around a lot as a kid?
Somewhat, yeah.
That does surprise me, because I always think they may just lived in one certain position their whole entire lives.
And I don't know what it's like to do that. I have no idea what it's like to have the same friends from elementary school and stay in one area for your whole life.
Wow. And speaking of swearing in Asian, I actually know how to say the F word in Cambodian.
How do you say it?
Jehoi.
Jehoi?
Yes, and it's really fun. I have a funny story about that. It's because I sort of dated my boss's daughter. My boss was Asian, and I have a huge crush on his daughter. She was like, you know, really a beautiful girl. And
so you learned how to say fuck.
I did. It was really funny. Well, because he wasn't really the assistant manager, but the other guy named me. He was so funny, and he was like cracking jokes. And he's like, if you want to say fuck, you say Jehoi. And I was like, oh my god, really? So I was kind of like, okay, Somali, Jehoi. And then
so how do you say fuck you then?
Yeah, it's something like, I don't know. But then she was like, how do you know that? And I was like, Nito. And then, like, I guess then the next day I'm like, my boss comes up to me and says, so I hear you're talking to my daughter. And I was like, no, that was me. I don't know what you're talking about.
You're like, I was at the movies all night.
Exactly.
I have no idea.
But I think we went on like 2 or 3 dates and nothing really happened. But we're still friends, so.
So do you still date Asian women? Do you have the yellow fever? God.
I do. I have to admit, I love Asian girls. If you have a sister, younger sister.
I do, but she's married with 2 kids and another on the way. Sorry about that.
I'm a big fan. I don't know if you've seen Tila Tequila.
Are you kidding? On MySpace? Oh, get this. I just saw a movie. She was just in a movie that I went to see. Oh, no, maybe it was I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. Did you see that movie?
She actually played
sort of silly bimbo stripper girl in, like, one scene, I think, with no lines. And I thought, well, see, look what she did for herself. Because isn't she just basically a marketing genius?
Of course. Now she has her own reality show, and she's bisexual, and she's...
She has her own reality show?
Oh, yeah. She's on MTV.
MTV.
Wow, is she called, interesting, or is it like a Paris Hilton kind of thing, like famous for being famous?
It's actually Paris Hilton. I think it's kind of, it's a little bit of both. It's Paris Hilton meets I Love New York, if you've seen Flavor of Love, that kind of reality show, trash. But it's all about her, and she's like bisexual, and so she has girls and guys, and she's eliminated. It's actually down, of course, it's come down to a girl and a guy, and who she's going to pick. Stuff like that. So
it's a little twist on The Bachelor. It's The Bachelor and The Bachelorette at the same time.
Exactly. And I think it's a really interesting concept in reality shows. You know, they're just taking over the world. I don't know.
Wow. Well, I have a MySpace page. It's myspace.com/Suzanne Huang. So check that out. It's SUZANNEWHANG. And thank you for pronouncing it correctly, because everyone says Suzanne Wang. It's actually Huang.
I know. I actually, the first time I looked at it, like, Suzanne, I'm like, is it Wang?
I know, but
Wan?
You know, it's sort of like Don Juan, that A sound in Juan, J-U-A-N. That's an A, too. But it's Don Juan. It's not Don Wan.
Of course.
So just think of Don Juan and then put like a G at the end. It's Suzanne Huang.
Very nice. And you said that are you Korean?
I'm 100% Korean. And Koreans, by the way, are the funny people of Asia. We're the funny yellow people.
You want to know who one of my favorite actors is from Korea is Song Kang. I don't know if you know him.
No. What is he in?
That?
He's been in The Fast and the Furious.
I've probably met him at one of those Asian Excellence Awards things. I think I have, actually.
I think Kathy Shute. It might be she or Shin. I forget. But she was on. But I don't know if you know Bobby Lee.
Of course, Mad TV. Korean, and he's funny.
Exactly.
And by the way, Margaret Cho, stand-up comedian, is Korean. And Steve Park, who used to be on in Living Color, and he was in Fargo. Did you guys see Fargo? He has a hilarious scene in Fargo where he's doing the North Dakota accent with Frances McDormand, and he's Korean, and I'm Korean. I'm telling you, it's because we're the little country that all the other Asian countries pick on. We're the oppressed country that everyone kicks around. So we have to use humor to rise above. I'm telling you, it is part of Korean culture, because growing up in a Korean family, every time my parents would have a bunch of Koreans over for a party, all night long, all everyone's doing is laughing their asses off. And it just seems like to me, like Chinese and Japanese cultures are known mainly more for being more serious. Not only serious, but like, you know, that's not funny. Like, they can't even laugh at themselves. Where Koreans can laugh, we can laugh at ourselves a lot more than any other Asian country, I believe.
Well, then, I don't know if you've seen, but...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, well, Mad TV actually did a parody on Korean soap operas with Bobby Lee.
God.
On YouTube.
I bet it was hilarious.
Oh, it was. It was so funny. It was something like... They're so overdramatic, and then they had like the subtitles, but they were talking. They would say two words in Korean, and it would be a whole paragraph.
Yep.
Really funny.
Exactly. And you know, we're the dramatic people. We have a lust for life. We're the Italians because we have this zest for life, and we're totally into food, and we laugh, and like. But literally, I really believe that it's like we're the black people of Asia, because you know we have to use humor to rise above. I don't know if you know this, but. Here's what I've heard. The Japanese hate us Koreans so much that if two Japanese people are getting married in Japan, discovered that there's any Korean blood in either of their family lines, the marriage can be annulled. Like they've been infected with Korean blood somewhere along the line. Isn't that insane?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, like people hate us. It's great though, because my parents forgot to teach me who to hate. Because you have to learn that stuff, and they never taught me who to hate, so I had no idea.
Oh,
I had no idea so many things. Like, for example, I don't know if you've ever heard this one, but, like, there are people who believe, in the same way that, like, oh, Jewish people have horns and black people have tails, that Asian women's vaginas are on sideways, that they're horizontal.
I heard that.
Okay,
it was
so
in the back of my mind.
I didn't even know that until about 5 years ago, and I'm thinking, shut up. So I started asking around, have you ever heard of this? And people are like, oh, yeah, I heard that. And then I'm thinking, how many guys fucked me just to find out? Oh, my God. Can you imagine the phone call the next morning? They're like, no, dude, it's the same. It goes up and down. You know, like, are you serious?
Well, I couldn't tell you. Experience, I don't know.
Unbelievable. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, there's that fascination that goes along with the yellow fever. It's like, ooh, they're erotic, and there's something, you know, mysterious, and their vaginas are on sideways, and they love you a long time. And I'm like, you know what? You know, there's nothing more annoying than a guy coming up to you at a bar and just going like, I just love Asian women. You know, that's not a compliment, because you're just lumping us all together. Oh, really, all Asian women, you love, like, you know, short, tall, fat, skinny, old, young, ugly, pretty, just all Asian women, like we're all the same? Because I feel like I'm wearing this Asian coat or something, and if I took off the coat, the guys would just run after the coat because they just have some concept.
Well,
you know,
if there's a sideways,
like,
vagina on that coat, then they'd go after it, too.
Exactly. Here's a rubber sideways vagina. It's attached to this Asian-looking coat. So you just go and you rub up against that. You just go hump that. Because if you think that I'm going to be, like, passive and submissive and demure, you got another thing coming. Like, you know, honestly, it's like, I think that's what they think, that I'm going to be, like, walk behind them and look down and obey, and that's just not who I am at all. You know, to me, it would be like going up to a white guy at a bar and going, you know, I just love me a white guy. You're white. You'll do. Let's go. Although that would probably work. But you understand my point.
I do, but I have to tell you, I don't do that at bars, so I'm very respectful. I kind of hide that. You know?
Because, like, literally, people think that's a compliment. I just love Asian women. It's like, no, that's not a compliment because you're making a gross generalization. That's the same offensiveness as saying all, you know, black people steal things and all Jewish people are cheap and all Asian women are awesome. It's like, no, they're not. You know, I grew up with Asian women who would knock you over, Asian women who, you know, would, like, knock you over with a baseball bat if you were in their way. So I don't think you'd love her.
Right. Unless you love domestic violence, and then that's just for you.
Exactly. That's true. If maybe there's an Asian woman just for you if you want to be abused with a baseball bat.
There you go.
But, you know, it's amazing having traveled all over the United States with I used to be on a show called Fox After Breakfast that Tom Bergeron hosted, and I was one of the field hosts that would travel all over the United States interviewing people for these live human interest segments for this morning show. It was so much fun. But I've been to every state in the U.S., and I swear to God, I think I'm going to write a book. It's going to be called Stupid Shit People Say to Asian Women, because I know I look like this. But I was born in Virginia, you guys. I grew up watching the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family. So when people say to me, you know, do you speak Oriental?
Oh, my God.
Okay, guess what, asshole? That's not a language.
Exactly.
So, no, I don't speak that. Or people will say, your English is so good, like shouting at me, like I'm retarded, you know, because
like
I look like
or
this.
Something and you can't understand the words that are coming out of my mouth.
Exactly. Or they're like, you look just like that Yoko Ono. Thanks. She's old and hideous. Thank you. And she broke up the Beatles. But good comparison.
Exactly. I was gonna say, plus, she's really hated. I mean, that's a great reference right there.
You know what I mean? It's like that's the only Asian they know of, so they're trying to make conversations, so they think it'll be good to tell me I look just like Yoko Ono.
Of course. It's like no, you're
have you ever, whenever somebody ever said that to you in front of your face, did you have the nerve to basically just bring up the right hand and just basically put it up in the air and just smack them?
You know what? I think when the guy asked me if I spoke Oriental, I said, no, do you speak idiot? And then my friends had to pull me off of, like, trying to choke him to death. You know what I mean? And, like, I had a woman in North Dakota go, I've always wanted to ask, how does that dry cleaning process actually work?
Oh,
and, you guys,
God.
She was serious. She was smiling. She was serious. And literally, what do you say? I was like, oh, I cannot tell you ancient Korean secret. Like, what do you say to somebody that's that ignorant?
Ignorant, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's actually another topic. Like, we learned a lot about it in one of the women's studies classes I took. I believe it was a women's studies class in my sophomore year in college. And we talked about how African-Americans, Hispanics, and also Asians are all coming up in the entertainment business. And since you are in the entertainment business and you are Asian, how do you feel for parts about Asians? Like, how do you feel based on that? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm very opinionated about this topic because I do not believe in statistics. And people love to quote statistics to you, and usually those are the people that want you to fail or they want to justify their own failure. So here's the thing. If I believed in statistics, then I would not exist because I'm 45 years old. I'm a minority. I'm a woman. I have small tits, and I live in Hollywood. So I should not be working ever, right? I'm working all the time, you guys. I'm hosting House Hunters International. I have a recurring guest star on Las Vegas. I just wrote a book about house hunting. I have a public speaking career. I'm studying to become a minister. I'm all over YouTube. I have a website. I'm on MySpace. I have fans all over the world. You know what I mean? And this is the most abundant time of my career. So if I believed in statistics, I would just not even try.
Exactly.
I would just crumble and say, oh, well, my time is over, and, you know, there's just no opportunities. I think that's a bunch of bullshit. I think it's whatever you decide it is. I think it's whatever you believe. I believe in the law of attraction and quantum physics. I don't know if you guys know about The Secret or you've heard, you know, my story about Oprah and The Secret. Do you guys know that story?
No, I don't.
Oh, my God. Well, you guys have – I went to your website, and it says, you know, to live life to the fullest. Well, that's completely my philosophy, and that's the philosophy at my Science of Mind church. And Science of Mind is a religion that's like the anti-religion, because most religions are very exclusionary and very hypocritical and want to scare you into their beliefs, telling you that, you know, you're going to burn in hell and you're a wretched, evil sinner and God, you know, hates your guts and all that shit. You know what I mean? Science of Mind philosophy is basically that we are all one, and that life is good, and that, you know, your birthright is to have a blissful life. And every service every Sunday is inclusive of anybody from any religion is welcome to come, and they actually mean that when they say that. And it's all like positive energy, you know, love and gratitude and celebration and giving and being of service, and that's what it's about. Nobody ever says you're going to burn in hell and, you know, you were born with original sin and you're horrible. You know,
you can't see me right now, but my hands are up in the air just praising me. That's a great philosophy.
Isn't that fantastic?
We'll make an awesome minister already.
Well, that's how I feel, because, like, to me, the best ministers are people with a sense of humor. So my intention, because I finished my first year and a half so far of studying to become a minister, but when I open a spiritual center, I don't even want to call it a church, because a lot of people have a negative connotation to the word church. It sort of gives them hives. But if I call it like a spiritual center, I thought I could call it like the Bliss Factory or something, like, you know, come and hang out at the Bliss Factory where we make bliss. You know what I mean? Just like show up. And I just want to incorporate my sense of humor, because I think every sermon should be funny, because that's what my grandfather was all about. But, you know, literally, like, to me, the reason that people get so turned off from religion is because they took a good idea, and then human beings have just bastardized it and fucked everything up so that people don't want to show up anymore, because they want to turn you into robots. They want you to turn into sheep and just, you know, give us money and do what we say because you're very afraid. And this is all based in, like, positive energy and love. And, like, the basic principle in quantum physics of the law of attraction is just that the karma is a boomerang, that what you put out, you get back, and there's a molecular physics explanation for why what you put out, you get back. Because on a molecular level, everything's vibrating. You guys know this, right? Like, even solid objects, if you look at them through an electron microscope, they're made up of molecules that are vibrating. So everything is energy. So everything has a vibrational frequency. The air, an object, human beings, planets, solar systems, everything has vibrational frequency. And
exactly.
It can all be measured. Like, a table has a really low vibrational frequency. A really positive person vibrates at a really high frequency. And basically what they're saying is, because everything is energy and energy cannot be created or destroyed, that means that thoughts and feelings have vibrational frequency too. Those are energy. And if you're thinking positive thoughts and feeling positive feelings, you are actually emitting a positive, high vibrational frequency. And when you do that, you are magnetizing high vibrational frequency people and events and circumstances and money and love and everything into your life. And that's a principle of quantum physics. And I love when people say, oh, I don't believe in the law of attraction. I'm thinking, it doesn't matter if you believe in it or not. That's like saying, I don't believe in the law of gravity. I don't care if you believe in the law of gravity. If I drop this pen, it's going to fall on the ground. You know what I mean? So it's not a matter of believing in the law of attraction. It's a matter of whether you know it and whether you use it for your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Of course, and speaking of the law of attraction, if you guys feel compelled after hearing that lovely speech, that was amazing, by the way,
to
call in, talk to Suzanne and us. Novell, why don't you give him the number?
Gladly. The phone number to dial in is 646-595-4228. We're here until 11:30, folks. Basically, taking everything that you have seen and have learned as far as everybody that you have met is concerned, that pretty much went into your stand-up routine at Funky Park?
Well, Sunky Park, the way that started is pretty funny, because I, for the bulk of my acting career, always thought I was a serious dramatic actress, because I could cry, you know, on a dime, and I just
love
thought
it.
Of myself
same
as,
here.
Pardon?
So, yes, same here.
Oh, really? You could just cry at the drop of a hat? Right. So I thought, I play Medea. I do Shakespeare, and I cry, and I gouge out my eyes, and, like, that's what I do, you know? And I started taking classes in L.A. at the Beverly Hills Playhouse, which is an amazing place to study acting, where they encourage you to not just come in and do scenes from, you know, a Tennessee Williams play, but you can also write your own stuff and bring it in and try it in a safe environment. So they actually encourage you to take risks and dare to fail and bring in something that you wrote. And so I thought, that sounds really fun to me, you know, because I have big balls. I have the biggest balls of anyone I know. I've been skydiving and hang gliding and bungee jumping. I'm an adrenaline junkie. I will try anything once, literally, right?
He tried Blog Talk Radio, so.
Exactly. So
go.
Obviously I'll do anything. So I decided, why don't I try doing stand-up comedy in my acting class, because really what could be more terrifying than doing stand-up comedy if you've never done it before? And I thought, okay, I'm going to try it. So I decided to write some material, and I signed up for it. Nobody assigned it to me. I signed up for it myself. I volunteered to do it. And most people would say, are you nuts?
Exactly.
You know, who would ever do that? But, you know, in the safety of your acting class, where these are your friends who support you and they know you, it's not like I was going to a comedy club
and doing it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so I thought, I basically came in and wrote 10 minutes of material about stupid shit people say to Asian women. You know, I just went on a rant about all the stuff that has actually been said to me in my lifetime. And it was unbelievable. People went crazy. People were laughing like they were. I got a standing ovation at the end of it. You want to talk about a drug. There's no bigger adrenaline rush than being able to make a room full of people laugh hysterically. And so I got hooked, and so I thought, okay, that was amazing. And so the teacher said, okay, that was amazing. It was intelligent. You have a voice. It's important. You have to start doing stand-up in comedy clubs. And I thought, wait a minute. No, not where they're strangers to me and they paid and they're drunk. And he goes, no, you don't understand. You don't have a choice. You actually have to. You have to do this. You were put on this planet. I mean, I'm sure you guys know that everyone knows that they have at least one gift that they do like no one else, that they were put on the planet to do, and it is your responsibility to bring your gift to the table throughout your life and be creative and be an expression of that. So I thought, okay. And then he said, the only thing I would tell you is that I would suggest that you try embracing this stereotype of Asian women that you hate so much. And I said, wait a minute, what? Because this is, you know, this is pre-Sunghee Park. This was pre-Polly on Las Vegas. It was, you know, before all of that. And I said, I started contorting in my chair. I was so livid. I really had I wanted to projectile vomit all over him when he said that. I said, what are you talking about? I've been trying to prove my whole life that I'm nothing like that. And he says, exactly. You are spending so much energy resisting it. Whatever you resist persists. You are still at the effect of that stereotype, but you've just gone the opposite way. But it's still in reaction to the stereotype. And he said, I'm not saying that that's all you can do. I'm just saying, what would happen if you tried embracing it as part of your artistic palette? That's all I'm saying. And I went home, you guys. Me, who's usually so happy and nice and loving and open-minded, I went home. I was livid. I was like, he's a fucking idiot. I'm going to quit class. He doesn't know what he's talking about, even though...
So I'm going through right now with actually... Yeah, I know exactly what you're...
Really? You can relate to this?
Yeah, I'm actually an actor as well.
So you understand. When somebody pushes you right up against the thing that's blocking you, it's very uncomfortable. And I thought, he's an asshole, and I'm never going back to that class again. But that only lasted about 24 hours, because the next morning I woke up, and I'm like, wait a minute. He has never led me wrong before. He's been a brilliant teacher for me, number one. Number two, it's insane to pay for a class and not even try something that's being suggested. So I knew that I was having what I call an organ reject, meaning my body did not want to do this assignment, but I knew I had to do it. So I thought, since I don't want to do this from the inside out, I'll try working from the outside in as a launching point. So I went to Koreatown, and I bought a hanbok, which is a traditional full-length Korean dress, and I'll buy the Korean shoes that are like shaped like canoes, and I'll buy a Korean fan, and I'll just put the outfit on, and I'll stand in my house. So literally, I went to Koreatown the next day, I bought the dress, I stood in my house, I put the outfit on, I was still livid. I was livid, I'm standing in the dress, I hate his guts, and I'm like, okay, what am I doing with this? Luckily, I was patient enough to wait for an idea. So I waited and waited, and I'm like, okay, what if she were a stand-up comedian? What if she's just got here from Korea? What if she has a thick accent? What if she's not very good at English? What if she has no idea what she's doing? What if she's terrible? What if she's the worst stand-up comedian who ever lived because she's doing it all wrong? What if she tells racist jokes that are offensive to everyone, but she doesn't know because she's so naive and sweet and innocent? And I started to get so excited. So then I wrote a bunch of material. Oh, I also had her telling old hack jokes from, like, Milton Berle days that aren't even funny. And, you know, obviously you're not supposed to, you know, tell jokes that someone else wrote. You're not supposed to, to be offensive. You're not supposed, you know, there's all these things you're not supposed to do. So I got excited. I brought this to my class, like, a week later. and I thought they loved the first time around. You guys, they were screaming. People had tears streaming down their face. People were holding their rib cages and falling off of their chairs. I've never experienced anything like that. I mean, they were laughing so hard because it was me making fun of racism and stereotypes and ignorance in America by going directly into it.
Exactly.
By becoming the very thing that I hate. You know, she was so ignorant, she was saying racist things against other races, and I hated when people would say racist things against my race that were ignorant. But now I was shining a flashlight on it and making fun of it and showing everyone how ridiculous it is and having some healing happen. I really believe that laughter helps you sort of level the playing field. It breaks down people's defenses so you can sneak your message in. And ever since then, doing Sunghee Park has been one of my greatest joys in life.
I agree. It always seems like acting is like a plunge, you know. It's a free fall. You just go into it, don't know what to expect, and just hopefully get something, you know, positive out of it.
Exactly. So. Now tell me, what was the experience that you were having with, you know, your acting journey and having someone push you up against the very thing that you hate?
Well, my teacher, he actually told me, like, he actually assigned me a monologue. So we weren't really going, because my teacher's very scatterbrained. And he's going, like, all over, you know, he'll be like, okay, so he'll give us a script, and then we'll do it, or sometimes he won't do it, and we'll do objectives and verbs and things like that, and, you know, what's your objective, and if he thinks that we don't really have good objectives, we won't do it, but, so it can be very frustrating. But then, you know, I went to a playhouse, and I had an audition for some sort of, like, gothic playhouse, and I did the play, it was Escanaba in the Moonlight by mm-hmm. Jeff Daniels.
Ooh.
And, yeah, it was really fun. It was, you know, it was very southern, so I could do, like, show my southern side,
mm-hmm.
and it was a very, like, stereotypical southern, like, twang and all that stuff, so it was a lot of fun to do, but then, like, I told him, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm like, I did Escanaba in the Moonlight, and he goes, I want you to do it right now, and I was like, what? And he's like, in front of the whole class, he's like, yeah, I signed it to you, and I want to see how you did it, and I'm just like, oh, my God, okay,
wow.
And I'm just like, and I had to, first off, I was trying to remember the lines, because it's been a few days, but usually don't forget it. So I went in there and I did it, and I'm just like, hopefully he likes it, I don't know. But then he's like, that was great. And I'm like, oh my God, it's awesome. And
but here's the thing, is that you did it. Do you know how many people would have just walked out of the room and said, I refuse to do that because I feel uncomfortable? Because comfort is death to an artist. If you are comfortable and you're just coasting along
just
and everything feels safe, then you are not creating anything that's
exactly.
interesting.
Don't you think
that the actors you admire the most are the people that get up on stage or on film or in television and they take risks? I mean, why do you think I love doing Polly so much? People, like, either love that character or they get livid. They're like, how dare you create a character, you know, that has an accent? I'm like, are you kidding me? First of all, my character is ballsy and hilarious.
He is, yeah.
You know what I mean? And so the stereotypical Asian woman would be, like, hiding underneath a table and not saying anything.
Anything, yeah. He's
you know what I mean?
Cave. Right.
And so I'm like, plus, why would you want to be criticizing me? Here's another thing I want to bring up, because when you're talking about, the industry, people love to say, you know, 98% of Screen Actors Guild members make less than $2,000 a year. And I'm like, you take that statistic and you live that out, if that's interesting to you, because that's not interesting to me. What's interesting to me is I create my own rules. Anything is possible. Whatever I choose to manifest, if I put my energy into it and I fully believe it and I take inspired action, the world is my oyster. So that's what I believe in. Those are the statistics that matter to me. And whenever anybody goes, you know, there's no opportunities for Asians and there's not enough opportunities for Asians and how come there's not enough Asians? I'm like, you know what? Shut the fuck up. Stop complaining and do something about it. You know, why aren't you if you care that much about it, then why aren't you writing, producing, and directing your own films, your own television shows, your own plays, and inviting people to the thing that you want to wait around for some, you know, white Jewish men in Hollywood to write the perfect part for your Asian ass? Shut up.
Thank you.
That's what I really enjoyed.
You basically described, you know, not just your race alone, but, you know, my race as well, because I'm hearing that everywhere.
Yeah.
Not everywhere, you know. There's not enough black people on TV. Why not?
Well, then shut up. How many? You know why? Because there's not enough black studio executives and black film directors and producers and black casting directors and black whatever. It's like you got to become those things. You want more scenes of black people to end up in a movie, then become a black editor and keep those people in. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like, you know, walk the walk, stop complaining, because guess what? When you complain about something, you are actually making the problem worse because you are focusing your energy that's in a negative way. And as we know, when you focus in a negative way, you are magnetizing more negativity to you, and they've proven it on a molecular level. That's like, I don't know if you guys, either of you are musicians, but you know what a tuning fork is, right?
Yeah, I do.
So if you take a tuning fork and you walk into a room filled with tuning forks that are set at all different pitches, and you set off that tuning fork, you whack it against something and you set it off, only the other tuning forks that are at exactly that pitch will sympathetically resonate. You know what that is, right? Where they'll make noise too, right?
Yeah.
All of the other ones remain stone cold. That is like a physical example of the law of attraction. When you are vibrating at a certain rate, you'll magnetize around you other people that vibrate, other projects that vibrate at your rate. You know, that's why you guys, if you haven't, have you seen The Secret?
No.
You know this?
No,
have you heard about it?
I've heard about the book, though. Yeah.
Okay, well, I have to tell you the story because it's the best story that I've ever experienced in my life. I was the first person to send Oprah Winfrey the DVD of this movie, The Secret, which is about the law of attraction and quantum physics. So what happened was, somebody told me that I need to check out this movie, so I watched the film. I order it on the internet. The website is thesecret.tv, like television. And I watched it, and I loved it so much because I already knew about the law of attraction from different books, but to watch a documentary about it where it was done in such a positive energy way, and it was easy to watch, and it was fun, and it made sense, and I was so excited watching this movie that I started jumping up and down and clapping and running around my living room and laughing. I was like, oh, my God, I love this movie. So I literally bought 100 copies of this movie that cost $30 each. So I spent $3,000 of my own money and sent it to everybody that I care about. I'm like, you have to watch this movie. It was like paying it forward. You know, it's like, I love this. I want you to know about this. Because it's so simple, but if you really get it, you can make anything that you want in your life happen. And it sounds like, ooh, that's a crazy. It's like, I'm talking about science. I'm not talking about some new age bullshit, you know, crunchy granola. I'm talking about science merged with spirituality. So I thought, you know who I should send this to? I should send this to Oprah. Because if Oprah watches it and likes it, then that'll be fantastic, right? So I decided to write her a letter. I'm like, dear Oprah, you know, my name is Suzanne Huang, and I host House Hunters, and I'm on Las Vegas, and blah, blah, blah. And I introduced myself, and I said, listen, I know that she read this book called A Return to Love by Marianne Williamson, which is a genius book. And I saw her interview once, and she said that she loved that book so much she bought 1,000 copies of it and gave it to everyone she loves. So I said, listen, Oprah, I know you did that, and I'm doing that on a smaller scale with this movie called The Secret. It's a DVD about the law of attraction and quantum physics. I sent 100 copies to everyone I love, and I loved it so much because it is the way I live my life. I believe it is the way you live your life. My dream is that you will watch it, you will love it, and you will do a show about it. And then I signed the letter Blissings because I think those are even better than blessings. I love to make up words. So I'm like, Blissings, Suzanne Huang, right? So I forget about it. A month and a half later, my cell phone rings and I'm in my car. I don't recognize the number, and I would never pick up my cell phone if I don't recognize the number. I'm sure you guys can relate. It's like, well, who knows? That could be like, this is AT&T. Would you like to switch to our service? So I normally don't answer the phone, but a little voice said, pick up the phone. You want to pick up this call. And I was like, okay. So I pick up the phone. I say, hello, and I hear, hi, is this Suzanne? And I said, yes, and she says, this is Libby from Oprah Winfrey's office. And I was like, shut, I almost crashed my car. I almost drove like an Asian. I was like, shut up. So I pull over, and she says, listen, I just opened your package today, and I have to tell you that I never call anyone who sends a package to Harpo Productions, because if you had any idea the sheer volume of mail we get, I never have time. And she said, but I had to call you. So here's why. She says, yesterday, because this was Monday morning, she goes, yesterday, which was Sunday, a friend of hers had dragged her to his house and forced her to watch this movie, The Secret. She had never seen it. She loved it. She didn't own it. She comes in the next morning and opens my package, which, by the way, that gives you an idea of the volume of mail. It took a month and a half for her to get to my package, which, by the way, was Federal Express and got put in the celebrity wing of mail. So even the VIP mail, it took her a month and a half to get to it, right? But in the divine timing of it all, if she hadn't just watched it the night before, she would have opened my package and gone, oh, whatever, and thrown it on the floor. You know what I mean? But she just saw the movie and loved it. So she just said, so I had to call you and tell you this because, I mean, it's the law of attraction. And I said, I know. Oh, my God. And she goes, and guess what? Oprah hasn't seen it yet. This movie had been out for a year. I could not believe that she hadn't seen it yet. But get this. Most people probably thought, oh, someone else will do it or she's probably already seen it. And I had those thoughts too, but I thought, wait a minute. You know, fuck that. I'm going to send it to her anyway because I had the idea to do it. I'm going to follow through on that impulse. So she says, Oprah's never seen it. You're the first person to send it here. We're on our way to South Africa for 6 weeks because we always go. You know how she has that school in South Africa, and in December she always goes. So she says, we're going to South Africa for 6 weeks. I'm going to bring it with us. I'm going to make sure she watches it. And I'm like, well, Libby, I'll be calling you in 6 weeks. And she goes, have a great night. I'm like, you too. I hang up. I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So 6 weeks later, I have it written in my date book to call over to Libby the next morning. Right. So it's like a Wednesday night. I'm hanging out waiting for my friend at a coffee shop to come and have coffee with me. Actually, tea, because I hate coffee. So I'm sitting there waiting, and this man comes over and helps himself to sit down at my table for two where I'm waiting for her. He just comes and sits down at my table and goes, hi. And I go, hi. And he says, how are you? And I said, I'm blissful. How are you? And he goes, following my bliss. And I thought, oh, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
And then my guides, because my spirit guides talk to me all the time. They say to me, it's okay, don't, you know, freak out. He's not hitting on you. Just chill. And I went, okay. So he says to the next thing out of his mouth is, have you ever seen the movie The Secret?
Oh, my God.
And I said, excuse me? And I said, not only have I seen it, but I'm the first person to send it to Oprah Winfrey. And he says, what? And he starts screaming and running around the coffee shop. And I'm like, what is the matter with you? And he comes back and sits down and he goes, do you know that Oprah's doing a show about The Secret in 2 weeks? And I said, wait a minute, what? No, I didn't know that. How do you know that? And he says, I go to Agape, which is a Science of Mind church in Culver City with Reverend Michael Beckwith from The Secret. And, you know, he was in The Secret, the minister from that church, and he announced to the whole congregation that he was flying to Chicago in 2 weeks to be on the show about The Secret. So I'm like, oh, my God, I have to call Libby. Like, obviously it all happened, and she hadn't called me yet, you know. So the next morning, and by the way, I said to him, wait a minute, why did you come over and sit at my table and ask me if I've seen The Secret? And he says, I have no idea. So basically he was following his divine impulse. You know,
yeah,
something told him, go over and ask her that question. So the next morning I start calling over there. I'm leaving messages for Libby saying, oh, my God, I want to come. And I have to come there and be in the audience because, you know, I'm the one that put this into motion. I'm so excited. I started leaving messages for her and her assistant. And then I forgot about it. I went to Sundance Film Festival, forgot about it, came back into L.A., and I realized it's now January 29th. The taping is the 31st. It's Monday, and the taping's Wednesday, and nobody's gotten back to me. Now, luckily, I read the book The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, and one of the four agreements that he suggests to live your life by is, number one, don't take anything personally. And so I decided not to take it personally that she hadn't called me back, because what if I had, and I'm like, you know what, fuck her, she hates me, and she's mean, and, you know, forget the whole thing.
It's like getting casting agent, you know?
You know what I mean? I'm like, no, I'm not going to take that personally, because she's probably really busy. She works for Oprah Winfrey. They've got a couple thousand things going on, right?
Right.
So I'm at my house, and I say to my boyfriend, I get another divine idea. I say, I think I'm just going to go. I'll just go. And my boyfriend goes, yeah. So I get on the internet, and this is crazy, you guys, because I don't have an invitation. So I just decide I'm going to fly to Chicago. So I get on the internet, I go to JetBlue.com. They've just opened a terminal at Chicago's O'Hare Airport. $400 round trip the night before. Are you kidding me?
Wow.
That would be like $2,000 on most airlines, you know, to fly round trip somewhere across the country. So $400, done. So then I'm like, okay, where am I going to stay? And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I haven't been to Chicago in 20 years. I have no idea where to stay. And then I thought, wait a minute. At the end of every Oprah show, I don't know if you guys are watchers of Oprah, but she, for 20 years, she's been saying, guests of the Oprah Winfrey Show, stay at the Omni Hotel. And
yes,
I remember
yes,
that. I could hear her voice in my head. So I get on the internet. I go to Omni Hotel. I Google it. I find it. I book myself a room. So now I'm all ecstatic. I'm like, I'm going. You know, and so my plan is I'm going to go to Chicago. I'm going to, like, go to Harpo Studios the next day. I'm going to get naked and set my hair on fire or whatever I have to do to get their attention to get me in there because I have to convince them to let me come to the taping. So Then I'm like, okay, I have to leave messages for Libby now. So I left her another message saying, Libby, it's Suzanne. Listen, I'm not asking you to do any. You don't have to pay for anything. You don't have to arrange for anything. I booked a flight. I booked a hotel. All I want is a seat for my little yellow ass to sit in at the taping. That's all I want. I just want to be there. And I'm like, Libby, I am using the law of attraction to manifest that you are going to do this and you are going to say yes. And I'm like, I'll see you on Wednesday, right? So I hang up the phone. So the next morning, my friend is driving me to Long Beach Airport, and my phone rings again, but this time it says Oprah Winfrey's office because I'm smart. I plugged it into my cell phone so I know to pick up. And I hear, Suzanne, this is Terry Golder. I'm the producer of this secret episode of the Oprah Winfrey Show, and I got your information from Libby Moore. I just wanted you to know that we have a seat reserved for you. And you guys, I started to well up. I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Yeah, I said,
you know what, Terry, that's a good thing because I'm on my way to the airport. So it's a good thing you have a seat reserved for me. So I hang up the phone. I'm like, oh, my God, oh, my God. And, you know, the flight felt like it lasted about 10 seconds because I was so ecstatic. I feel like I levitated all the way to Chicago. I was like, oh, my God, this is so great. So I check into the Omni Hotel that night, right? And I realize that I'm standing right behind Jack Canfield, who is in the movie, The Secret. He wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul, that whole series of books, and he was in the movie. So he's standing right there. So I'm like, oh, my God, you're from The Secret. I just blurted out like a complete loser. I'm like, hey, you're from The Secret. And he turns around, and I introduce myself, and I tell him my story. And he says, oh, my God, Suzanne, you're the reason why we're all here. And I said, I know. And then I got to tell him this story of how, did you guys ever read Chicken Soup for the Soul?
I've heard.
No.
Well, it's like these really short, true, inspirational stories. Like they're each about a page long. So I get to tell him, and then he introduces me to his wife, Inga, who he raves about in the movie, The Secret. And so I'm standing there with him and Inga, telling him the story of how when I first read Chicken Soup for the Soul, I was on an airplane. And there's this one short story about this little boy who goes to a pet store to buy a puppy. And he picks out this puppy with, like, a crippled leg and says he wants that puppy, how much for that puppy? And the pet store owner goes, oh, that one's useless. You can have that one for free. And the little boy's like, no, I want to pay full price for that puppy. So he demands to pay full price. He leaves. He saves up the money. He comes back, and he pays full price for that particular puppy. And as he's leaving the pet store owner says, okay, but why would you want that puppy? That, you know, puppy is deformed. And the little boy lifts up his pant leg, and he has a prosthetic leg. And he says, I just want that puppy to be raised by someone who understands him. And I'm reading this on the plate, and I'm like, ah, ha, 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 that's beautiful. You know, and the guy next to me, he's like wearing a suit. He looks really uptight.
Yeah.
I tap him on the shoulder. I'm like, you have to read this story. This is so beautiful. And he's like, get away from me. And I'm like, no, it's one page. And I think just because he was now afraid of me, he read the story. And I swear to God, he got to the end of it, and he goes, ah. He starts crying. And then we passed it around the whole row. We had like 9 people on the airplane bawling. Anyway, so I got to tell him that story. And he loves the story. And anyway, so then he's like, okay, see you tomorrow morning at the taping. So I go up and check into my room, and they check into their room, and I'm exhausted. I can't wait to get into my pajamas and order room service and crash because I'm so tired. And then the voice comes again, and the voice goes, yeah, now you're going to want to go to the phone and pick it up and call and find out Jack Canfield's room number and talk to him and see what he and Inga are doing for dinner tonight. And I'm like, no, 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 really, because I'm tired and I just talked to him and that's weird and he's going to think I'm a stalker and I don't like that idea. Then they're like, shut up and do what we say. So now my heart's pounding. My heart's pounding because I'm like, I don't want to do this, but I feel like it's my divine voice talking, you know. So I call, and the phone rings, and, you know, he picks up, hello. And I'm like, hi, Jack, this is Suzanne Huang. We just met in the lobby. And he goes, yes, we did, like completely friendly. And I say, listen, I know it's a long shot, but what are you and Inga doing for dinner tonight? And he goes, well, Suzanne, all of the people from The Secret, all the panelists who are going to be on the show, we're all getting together at 7 p.m., and we're going to have dinner in the hotel restaurant. Do you want to join us? And I'm like, yes, please.
That is so cool.
And so I got to meet everyone from the movie. I got to go to the taping. I got to meet Oprah at the end. I got to tell her my story on Oprah After the Show, which is on the Oxygen Network, you know.
Yeah.
And then I got to get my photo taken with her. And then I realized that 4 months prior to this happening, I had cut out a picture of me and taped it next to a picture of Oprah and put it in what I call my magical creation box, where I put things in that I want to manifest. And now I have a real photo of me and Oprah hanging on my living room wall.
Nice.
That's amazing.
And that's just proof of how a tiny gesture can have such a huge ripple effect, because now, you know, hundreds of millions of people know about The Secret and the Law of Attraction because I wrote her a letter and sent her a DVD.
Mm-hmm. I honestly say that it's very inspirational.
Now, is there a way that anybody can find the Secret?
Yeah, you can find it. Like, it's in book format, in audio CD format, and in DVD format. And you can go to thesecret.tv. But now, because it's been on Oprah, it's literally at every, you know, Blockbuster, every Barnes & Noble, every Borders. I mean, I think you can find it everywhere now. But
at
I really
Walmart?
Recommend it. Yeah, probably.
Walmart.
You can probably find it there, too.
You actually were talking, you said you were a spiritual guide. I think that's awesome. And I actually want to know your opinion. What do you think about tarot cards?
Here's what I think because of what I know about the Law of Attraction. If you believe that you will get divine wisdom from a tarot card reading, then you will. If you're vibrating at a frequency that's very high, then you will pull in a tarot card reader who's really knowledgeable and high-vibing and wonderful.
Yeah.
If you're getting a tarot card reading reluctantly and you think it's bullshit, then you will get nothing out of it.
Exactly. It's actually really because, like, you know, my aunt actually, she was huge into everything. I don't know if you heard of Reiki. Or...
Of course. I love Reiki. I love
yeah.
Reiki. I love acupuncture. I love anything. I love to try anything alternative. I am a big believer in the mind-body-spirit connection.
Well, she was into all that. And whenever she actually died in 2000, and whenever my uncle was giving away her things, you know, he said, this is a deck of her tarot cards. And I was like, I'll take them.
Absolutely. Take them and know that they're infused with her energy.
Exactly.
And when you do it, like, you know, have the postulate in your mind that you will get something wonderful and beneficial out of it, and then you will.
I swear to God, like every time I've done a reading so far, like, it's really become accurate and true, and still, so I have chills just talking because you're so inspirational.
Oh,
so cool.
Yeah. Thanks. So maybe I can sign you guys up for my spiritual center once it's open.
Yeah, wow.
That would be good.
It just seems New York City. I'll go.
Anything could happen.
I promise to make you laugh. Exactly. Well, you know, I've become a public speaker now. I do keynote speaking across the country now. I have that book. It's called Susan Wong's Guide to Happy Home Buying. I do everything.
I think you're the Asian female in me.
Exactly. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we have a scene together. Hopefully we get a movie together and we have a scene together.
That would be
fun.
So much fun.
That's for tall, I guess.
Yeah, and tell people to go to my website, which is SuzanneHuang.com, or my YouTube page, which is YouTube.com/SuzanneHuang, or MySpace, or whatever, and, like, you know, shoot me an email or sign up to be my friend on MySpace. That would be fun.
Hey, we'll add all the links on there to our Blog Talk Radio page. You guys will be able to find that out at Buzzworthy Radio.
Thanks, you guys.
It was great having you on. We would love to
have
you again.
Great to talk to you. That went by fast, huh?
For hours.
It did.
I'm telling you.
You could be here forever. I mean, you have so much amazing stories. I loved every single one of them.
Thank you.
You're definitely invited back.
Good. Well, great to
talk
to you guys. And you guys have a blissful night filled with blissings.
Thank you very much. Suzanne.
Just follow the bliss. Follow the bliss.
Okay.
Bye, Suzanne.
Bye.
Bye.
Holy
show, my
crap,
man.
Was she amazing.
Another amazing show, my man. Another one. And then I can't believe how many stories she had. They were so incredible. They were just so much fun.
That's what I love about our guests. So far we've had, you know, the most amazing guests on who have been so inspirational and who have been there, and she was just so interesting, and in her positive message, you know, definitely. So keep in contact with her.
You know, she's one of those that's basically able to be fun about everything, but yet have a serious side about it as well, which is what I liked about everything that she had to say tonight. And
I guess that's at the end of the show. Are we done?
It's just incredible. We are done, man. I can't believe that hour went by fast, man.
I was actually in a really bad mood, and she put me in a really good mood, so.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I really am. You know, we're going to be back again at 10:30 next week.
Who's our guest next week?
Our guest next week, we're going to be having on, and this is also subject to change, as is all the guests we're going to have on our show, just to let you all know. Next week, we are scheduled to have on Nazanin Bonatti. She plays Leda on Jenner Hospital and Jenner Hospital Night Shift.
Hey, another show I don't watch.
Well, come on. We'll get there, man. We'll get there. And we're going to have on Blog Talk Radio's own Dr. Blogstein. He's going to be coming on our show doing a little bit of cross-promotion. So that's going to be fun. I love Dr. Blogstein.
When are we going to go to cross-promote our show, I swear?
Well, let's see. We actually, well, I actually am trying to work that in with Dr. Blogstein. So hopefully when he comes on our show, we'll be able to discuss when we...
Are we still on the air?
No, they can't hear us now until they download the archive. So this is this is buzzworthy after dark.
Yeah, it's just like Oprah show, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But I love talking about actors because I can just so relate to them because that's what I want to do. It's just, and like Jeanette said, anything can happen.
She really definitely gave a lot of advice, you know, as to following your dreams. I think more so for you.
Learning is that writing a letter to whatever you want. Look at what happened. Catherine Hicklin, and look what happened for Suzanne.
I mean, it's basically like it's telling you to, you know, just go for it. You know, basically just go for it. If you don't, you know what I mean?
I wrote a letter to Aaron Spelling, and I think he got it, and then he died. I like to think that Aaron Spelling read my letter on his deathbed and somehow forgot to tell Tori or Candy or Brandy that find Matt Politello in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and let's make a show for him.
Hey, yeah. You never know what could happen. You never know what might have happened. You know. Everything happens for a reason. Everything always happens for a reason.
You're a liar. Just joking. So it was really fun. I at first, I was like, oh, I love Asian girls. She's like, don't ever say that. I'm like, oh, my God. I totally shot myself.
I just thought it was funny, though, that she was just basically just, she was very upfront. I love that about our guests, that you can basically be very truthful.
It's not like I'm oh, my God, Asian girls are, like, you know, it's very much, like, that's what I prefer, you know what I'm saying? It's not, like, a fetish or something. It's not, it's, like, I don't know, they're exotic to me and interesting, but not because of the whole stereotypical, like, oh, my God, is your hoo-ha sideways.
Right.
But it's because, you know, they're different. I think it's a different thing. It's alternative. It's not normal. It's not that it's normal. It's not saying, oh my God, I should shut my mouth right now. I'm not saying it's different, and everything is different. And that's what I think is everything is different. So
yeah, exactly.
All right, well, I'm gonna go online.
Great doing this with you again this week. Hopefully, we'll see you again next week.
I wasn't here last week because I fell asleep. I fell asleep at 7:30, and I just didn't wake up.
Well, I'm glad you did.
According to you, I blew you off, so.
Hey, I was just joking. You know.
I know.
You know. But we're going to be back here again next week at 10:30. Then this will be our final show of the new year because unless Matt wants to do some shows, I won't be available because I'm taking the holidays off, so we won't be back.
I
want to
do a show by myself. That'd be so weird. And I'm so mad at people who did not call in this night show.
Hey. You know, there are times where we have...
I'm going to go online.
To other shows where they had guests on, they don't call in at all. Because I've talked to them, and they basically said they have no idea what to say.
Wow.
They have no idea
what to say. Or they don't have the cojones to do it, so...
I think if you listen to this show tonight, I think you should listen very well to the point where you said you have to try something once. So if you are destined to call into the show, you should do it. I mean, it is a live show. We mess up. I mean, none of us are perfect. We have to. That makes the whole brunt of the show is a lot of fun.
All right. Well, bye, everybody. You had a good time doing the show. I hope you had a good time listening. So make sure to join us next week. And just like I got to do the intro, I hopefully do the conclusion as well. So
yes, you get to
very another inspirational guest on next week as well. Maybe a future potential wife. I don't know.
You never know.
So.
And then we'll be back in the new year with Cassie DePaiva and Hillary B. Smith back at our original...
More show. People whose shows I don't watch, but still.
Hey, you got to spread your wings. But when we come back in January, we'll be back at our original time at 10 p.m., so this 10:30 time slot is not going to last.
Oh, my God, all right. I'll be online, people. So you can add me at jig.23 if you want to talk to me. I'll be online right now if my internet works.
We're going to take this conversation off the air, but we'll see you next week.
All right, bye.